With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this Sunday evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Eboff. And Mike, we got a lot to get to, despite the fact that the Islanders have still not said anything. We're on like it's got to be week four now of this, right? I mean, we're well into the conference finals and we still have not heard from Lou Lamoriello, but that doesn't mean that we don't have stuff to talk about because we are going to get into something, but then we're going to get into a topic that we enjoy very much and people have enjoyed hearing us talk about. So I hope you're ready.
Yeah. Part two of, of I don't know how many.
Yeah. Right.
It could end up being, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, length
right.
phenomenon here, but, well, I'm really excited.
Movies are big. Sequels are out. Fast X is out. You know, we got a Flash reboot coming. So it's a time for that sort of thing. But we will get to that in due time, I promise. There is something I want to talk about in terms of the Islanders before we get there. Maybe we'll throw in a little Coyotes talk at the end of this segment, too. But so in listening to our episode last week, we talked about the Andrew Gross's story about how he believes that Lou Lamoriello is going to be getting a contract extension worth 3 years. And we talked a lot about Lou and, you know, his, that whole thing and, you know, whether or not he should be brought back and what we felt about it. But one person we left out of that conversation, ironically, even though he is also mentioned in that story, was Lane Lambert. It sounds like Lambert would also be brought back under Lamoriello and would get an extension, which, you know, I don't think is surprising, but definitely is worth discussing. We all kind of lived through Lambert's first year. It was not smooth by any stretch of the imagination, but at the end of the day, they did make the playoffs. I just want to state up front, I didn't think he would get fired. It's pretty rare for a coach in the NHL to get fired after 1 year without any sort of extenuating circumstances. And, you know, although we might, it might have felt that way. Having a bad power play is not an extenuating circumstance. So I'll just throw it to you. Like, what are your feelings on Lambert, assuming he comes back? Again, it's not a surprise necessarily, but, we were kind of light on the coach all year long. But now if he comes back for year two, I guess we have to start forming an opinion. So what do you feel about Lambert coming back for another year behind the bench?
I think the fact that we were light on him, and I think most people were. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, fire Lambert stuff out there.
January saw a lot of that stuff. Yeah.
And then even towards like the end of that playoff series too, and every shift that Sam Bolduc took in game two, I was like, oof. Mm. But I think that's just going to happen with any coach. Like, you're going to hear some folks out there who just want the coach to be shown the trap door. And I think the fact that Lambert's, like, his name just like rarely came up even on our show or whenever anyone was talking about the Islanders, because I don't think anyone knows. Right? Like, right. I don't think anyone knows if what kind of job he did. Right. There were certainly some significant issues that he never sorted out. The power play, of course, is number one. I think that it's not even loyalty, but to some guys on the power play, but the lack of a plan B in certain situations. And that was something I think we criticized Trotz for, yeah, too, is that if plan A doesn't work, just try plan A harder. Lambert was, his plan A's just weren't as good as they were when Barry Trotz was here, whether that was personnel or coaching, I don't know, but they just really didn't seem to, when things would get, you know, hairy, the Islanders had trouble kind of adjusting. And one kind of weird phenomenon this season that went on that nobody ever talked about, I mean, we talked about it early in the year, was that the Islanders for like the first 8 or 10 weeks of the season were like around the league lead in goals at 5-on-5.
Yeah, that was weird. I was thinking about that today.
Yeah. It was like them and then Seattle and a couple other weird teams, Buffalo up there, and the other ones stayed up there and the Islanders didn't. because there was that whole narrative about, oh, they're going to play wide open this year, that, or right, not, or more open. They're going to be more free flowing. And,
right, and well, we wanted more offense out of Barry Trotz, and now you got it. And that was true up until December. And then
exactly. And then I always come back to this game, that Kraken game that started the whole disaster. The Islanders had a little momentum. They go out west and they were puffing their chests out about how they were going to carry the momentum. And I still remember Anders Lee's post game after they won, whoever they beat. I think that was, it might have been a Penguins game. And then they flew out west. Mm. And he's like, yeah, you know, the first game out west is always a little tough. You take some time to adjust to it. And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, so he's already making an excuse for them to lose against Seattle. And then they're going to have to do the Alberta two-step, which is going to be hard. Or they play Vancouver, then it's the Alberta two-step. And it just didn't work out. And after that trip, the Islanders went from like tangibly being a team that played this more activated style, more pressure, more all action kind of type, like almost kind of like the Hurricanes look in a way. Just not as good. And then all of a sudden it was like they turned off all the spigots and like shut off the water valve,
right?
Because then they became the Islanders that we were used to, which was, okay, we're just going to try to win every game 3-2 and just claw, you know, dig up as many points as we can because we're going to need to do that to make the postseason. I actually don't think that was a bad idea if they had continued to try to play this offensive buzzy style. Like, they would have missed the playoffs by 8 or 10 points. So I guess that adjustment was correct in a big picture sense. But when you looked at like game to game, it just seems like they never found a way to adjust to the situation, whether they would go down early, they'd get a lead. They just never really seemed to manage it. But I don't know. I this is all going to lead me back to saying, I have no idea if you did a good job or a bad job. I feel like this is a lot of my teachers probably looked at my report card at the end of the year, depending on the subject, or like, oof. He did his homework. He didn't shut the fuck up, but he wasn't mean and he wasn't rude. Was he a good student or a bad student? I don't know.
At the end of the day, he was above the cutoff line. You know, would have been the same thing. At the end of the day, you did the job right. So can't really complain too much.
and that was that. That's kind of how I feel about it. But I really would love to do a one of those type of articles that Pierre LeBrun seems to have cornered the market on, where you ask around the league.
Executives ask,
I would like an anonymous thing because whether it's Islander fans or whatever, I think there would be some people at both extremes. Or actually, I don't even know if there's any people on the one extreme, which is like, he did great. I don't think I heard that once.
Right.
Honestly. But I did hear a bunch of people saying the opposite. And and then I think most, like the average out would be most people sitting where I think you and I know I am, which is, I got no idea. Like I don't think I would be heartbroken if tomorrow the Islanders, like, we were parting ways with him, nor would I be concerned if he's the coach on opening night. So,
right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Again, it gets back to something I've talked about a few times, which is that, like, Barry Trotz sort of ruined us. Like, here comes this guy who's unlike any other coach we've had before. He's, accomplished. He's experienced. He's won a Stanley Cup, in this case, literally the year before he took over the Islanders. And within a couple of months, and, like, right off the bat, actually, he was mad that guys were missing assignments and not following the game plan. And we had never seen that before. And he demanded that they, win games, which, again, was mind-blowing. And then by December of that year, we talked about this a lot, they had started to round into what they would eventually become, which is this sort of defensive buzzsaw that, no, they didn't score enough, but they didn't score a lot, but they didn't really need to because they didn't give you anything. It was, if you managed to progress past the neutral zone, that was almost the best you could hope for against these guys. Under Lambert, there was no such sort of transformation. Like, it was more like, and I know this is going to cause a lot of people to roll their eyes, but it was a little bit more like the sort of Jack Capuano era, in the sense that, like, obviously he's teaching these guys something, but it's hard for us to determine what that is, because every game they seem like a different team. Like, there would be games where they would score five goals and win easily, and then there were games when they could not get a scoring chance at all, let alone a goal. And so I think that's where a lot of the sort of unknown quantities of Lane Lambert come from. It's hard to, again, I'm with you. Like, it's hard to give the guy a report card. You listen to the postseason press stuff from the players, and most of them had really great things to say, particularly the defensemen, would go into detail about how much he helped them. And then you'd have other guys that were like, it was fine. Josh Bailey obviously didn't seem too thrilled, but he's the guy who got scratched a bunch. So, including on what would have been his 1,000th game. So I could see that too. But it is funny. You're right, though. It's very rare. It was very rare for somebody to be like, man, what a great job by Lane Lambert, until the end, when they did make the playoffs and people did say, like, hey, you know what? At the end of the day, again, there's that phrase again, he did get them to where they needed to be. Although, as we've talked about many times, they got a little bit of help from the Chicago Blackhawks and the Pittsburgh Penguins in that scenario. And I mean, had the Penguins won that fateful game, whatever it was, the Tuesday before the end of the season, we might be having a very different conversation about Lane Lambert. And it would not be as complimentary, or at least incomplete, I should say.
Yeah, he owes Peter Mrazek
right,
a lot. Yeah, it's I don't know if I've ever felt this way about a coach. I keep going back to Steve Sterling, honestly.
Right. That's a good example, I think.
And it's not just because of the slick back hair that the two of them both had. I think if you just go from of my lifetime as a invested fan, starting in 2001, is like Laviolette. Obviously came out of the gates and just set the island on fire. It was very successful right from the start. Then whatever happened between him and Michael Pekka, who knows? Then it was Sterling, and I still to this day don't think if you could make it, if you had an NHL Jeopardy question and you needed the Final Jeopardy, or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, it was a hockey edition. If you asked who was the Islanders head coach in 2000, what was it, 2003-04, whatever he took over, who took over for Peter Laviolette, I should say, I don't think anybody outside of the island would know that who Steve Sterling was. And then Nolan was, him, like Bradshaw and Ted Nolan. Into Ted Nolan, like Bradshaw was an interim guy, but Ted Nolan was, you know, he became our guy, kind of like there was a kind of galvanizing thing about Ted. That team was fun, that he got to the playoffs. Then things went south. Scott Gordon, I think everybody was on the same page about one way. Was it the good way? Then, you know, Jack Cappy, like he wasn't our uncle, but he was the guy that shows up to the family party. Right. And you're like, yeah, it's my Uncle Jack. Like, oh, who's he related to? He's like, no one. We just call him that, like, because I've just known him forever. Right? You know, like, he's just you know, been around the family for so long, and he's, you know, he's so much fun. He's the guy that you want to be sitting at his table after 11:30 p.m. at these family parties in someone's backyard.
I think with Capuano, though, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but like, I felt like the players really did like playing for him. And definitely. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
I think you're right.
Yeah, and I don't know if Lambert, not that I think, you know, I'm not trying to, trust me, nobody run with this or anything. I'm not trying to sow any seeds of discontent here, but I don't know if I get the same sense from these players that they feel the same way about
Lambert. I feel like they feel about him the same way we do.
He's all right. Yeah. Like that. You know, he's okay.
In the same way Cliff Ronning felt about Steve Sterling. Like, this is not, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the Islanders just don't get any attention from outside the island. So people have opinions on basically every coach in the league. But I think if you asked anybody.
Doing like a Substack or whatever, you know, Patreon kind of breakdown of Lane Lambert's systems with the Islanders this year.
No.
And the difference between them and Barry Trotz. So we're kind of stuck. Like, we're just stuck with what we've got, what we saw with our eyes. Yeah. And was okay, I guess.
And the numbers, I think, bear that out too. Like, they were some good, some bad. They improved defensively. They did not offensively. The power play was abysmal, and the penalty was generally good. And they got good goaltending. I mean, it is a Jackson Pollock painting of results. It's just everything. They're all over the place. I have no idea. At all. And I haven't heard anybody truly make a strong argument for either way.
For Lane Lambert.
If someone wrote tomorrow on The Athletic or Hockey News or whatever, here's why, you know, 8 reasons why Lane Lambert should be high or keep his job and 8 reasons why he should be fired. I think, like, if those two articles ran at the same exact time, I think they'd just be parallels. Like, the power play sucked, the other person would just say the penalty kill is good. It's just that the balancing out just ends up with them being this team that snuck into the playoffs, and the way that it everything screams mediocrity and middle of the pack, but the way that they got there, of course, you know, and I'm getting kind of like PTSD just thinking back on the season a little bit here. It's been nice and relaxing finally since these teams have been eliminated, but I don't really want to think about the Islanders actually playing hockey, now I'm getting a little the heebie-jeebies just thinking about those two games. I remember that back-to-back against Tampa and Carolina.
Oh my god. Or that afternoon game against Boston where they just lost. That was the one where Barzal got hurt.
It's just
right.
The way that they got to this is bizarre, and does that mean Lambert deserves credit for getting them through that, or does it mean that he does not deserve credit because he's didn't keep it from not being bizarre? I don't know.
Right, and I mean, and then, you know, as with any coach, there's like extenuating circumstances. Like, he didn't have Barzal for whatever it was, 35 games. Like, that's a big deal. But again, Barzal was there in January when the team literally stopped scoring goals. So there's that too. You can point to dudes who regressed. Noah Dobson, I'm looking at you. But then you can look at guys that came along, and it took a while for him to get there. But by the end of the season, we were like killing ourselves because Alexander Romanov was going to be out of the lineup. How the hell did that happen? You know, Sebastian Aho turned himself into a pretty good player, and I'm sure that, you know, there's a, you know, some Lane Lambert had to have something to do with that, right? It wasn't just Aho just kind of spontaneously deciding to be an NHL defenseman for the first time in his career. So. I mean, there's so much of this, like, yeah, this was great. This wasn't great. Brock Nelson was still good. Like, he was as good as this year as he was under Trotz at all. But, you know, you could point to guys that maybe weren't as good. So like JG Pageau, maybe not as good. You know, Anders Lee, yeah, he's okay, but you know, great season. Barzell started out hot, got hurt, and what are you going to do? And then there's like the Bo Horvat question. Like you integrate Bo Horvat, he was fine for a couple of games. Barzell gets hurt, and then he's never heard from again. You know, so like there's like again, like you said, the penalty kill was good, power play not so good. There were things that were good, yeah. There were things not so good. He obviously had a Vezina candidate goalie. Like you can't take that away from him either. We've heard that a lot. You know, you tell me, show me a good coach, and I'll show you a good goalie. Like that's kind of how many mistakes did Ilya Sorokin cover over for him? So it's literally impossible, I think, to get a read on Lane Lambert after 1 year. We check in, let's say we check in 6 months from now in December or January, and maybe we'll have a better idea. But yeah, it's hard, which is why we neglected him last week, I think.
Yes. And basically all season. And I don't think we're the only ones. I think you really have to work hard to come up with an opinion on it, him. Like there's, when you're handicapping a horse race, you'll hear people just talk about, you know, I've got like a really strong opinion on this horse, or, you know, I can't tell because, you know, he's run some good races and other races he's looked terrible, but he's also had some bad trips around, like he's got bumped or whatever. And I feel the same way about Lane Lambert. He's showing up to his big race, and you're like, well, what do you think about this number 8 horse? And you're like, well, I can make a ton of excuses for him, and I can also say, or I can say that he's run some good races, and in the end, like, I don't know. Maybe he's worth the long odds, and I think that if you put every coach in a horse race right now, Lane Lambert would have some pretty long odds to win the race in the middle you know, in the middle of the pack, kind of like a 20-1 shot. But I mean, one thing I could tell you is he's very good at things that Lou Lamoriello likes, which is saying absolutely nothing to nobody.
I was gonna say, his post game press conferences were not in his favor. That's for sure.
And he looks, and you know what I thought was hilarious at when Mrazek was doing his thing, and his wife was watching the game, and she was like giving him updates on the Blackhawks Penguins game, and he was upstairs watching American Hustle. Now that I think about it, like he looks like a character out of you know, that kind of movie, like
crime movie, con man type of thing,
that was filmed in like this kind of, like a David O. Russell movie is perfect for him, because it's like kind of, you know, there's some like modern techniques that like draw out like the colors of the era or whatever, and you could just see him in one of these kind of suits, like I could see him in one of those like three-piece maroon suits of the 70s.
Well, he's always known for like kind of over-the-top characters, David O. Russell, you know, so like Lambert would be like the sort of scowling tough guy in the background,
right?
And he'd stick out like a sore thumb because it's a David O. Russell movie, right? So he'd be wearing like a crazy suit,
just smoking a cigarette with Lambert should honestly just have an ashtray in front of him at all times. He should just be behind the bench,
right?
Sitting on a, you know, a big kind of office chair looking thing, not like a Godfather chair, but like a you know, a chair you'd see in an office, like one of those brown leather ones, and yeah, he should like the office of someone who runs a bar, like a 70s bar in, you know, some
like at the Bada Bing, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Like the back room of the Bada Bing.
Yeah, exactly. He should have an ashtray in front of him, and John McClane should be shooting pool in the background, you know, cracking a joke, and now I just need to see him with an ashtray. And, I don't even care if he's smoking, just have the ashtray there and a cigarette just going through its life in front of him. You know?
Yeah, that's definitely so. I mean, so again, there's things that we like about Lambert. We talked a couple episodes ago about we like him kind of losing his shit on the bench, which is kind of a different thing, very different than his predecessor, who famously claimed he only argues with the refs when he knows he's right. And Lane is a little bit more, you know, I don't know if he's like Doug Waite crazy, but he's definitely closer to that than Barry Trotz was. And he's got the great look. And again, I think the players do like playing for him, but there was definitely a different vibe. So, you know, again, we glossed over him last week, and this is why. We just don't really have much of an opinion on him at all. I know this is great podcasting, obviously, but it's, we'll have to figure out more. And I would like to see some, you know, a lot of it is going to come down to upgrades, I think. And that's where the offseason comes in, and we'll kind of see how it shakes out next year, if things, you know, if the same guys who took steps backward this year do again, well, then you might be in trouble. But if they bring in some guys who help and you know, maybe all of a sudden Lane looks like a much better coach, well, that might mean a thing too. Real quick, I just want to talk quickly about the Coyotes, switching gears very quickly. They, by now you've heard, they had an arena vote out in Tempe and it got voted down. There was actually three measures on the ballot, all related to building a new arena for the Coyotes in Tempe, and they all got voted down by all about the same amount. And so now their future is up in the air. Stop us if you heard this before. And you know, it's funny because this arena vote thing, you talked about PTSD before. If you're an Islanders fan and you were around in 2011, I guarantee you had PTSD from that referendum, which still stings, for the Lighthouse Project, which got voted down pretty quickly by the people of Nassau County. And, you know, I don't know. No Coyotes fans are listening to this, but I do find it funny that the same people that are always willing and immediately pull the shoot on the, well, you're going to have to move this team now because they failed again, seem to not understand that if the NHL wanted this team out of Arizona, they would have left a long time ago. Somebody wants them there. Gary, he probably wants them there, and they will just find a new place to play somehow. You know, they've talked about maybe having them check up with the Suns somehow over in Phoenix. I don't know if that's even a viable option. I don't know. So other places have jumped up and said like, hey, we can build an arena here too. So I would not be so quick to think that they're going to leave. People have them earmarked for Houston or Salt Lake City is the hot new one. They want to move there. None of these places have anything close to an ownership group that wants to bring them there. So I don't think they're going anywhere, but it was kind of funny that, you know, this, I shouldn't say funny, but it was very deja vu that this other team now lost this public vote for many reasons, I'm sure. Now they're, you know, future is up in the air, and it's like, yeah, we've been there, done that, and now the Islanders are playing in a $1 billion arena that's right back where they were before. So it can work out for them, and I think it could work out for the Coyotes too, but it's not a good look. And if you read Larry Brooks's column, he talked about there were some complaints by the players to the Players Association about travel conditions and you know, things that went against the collective bargaining agreement. We'll have to see how that shakes out. So it's not good right now, but I would be very, very surprised if the Coyotes ever actually leave Arizona. I think they're going to be there. They're just going to find a new place for them. And again, we've been down there, but it's also crazy to me that the Glendale thing has been 20 years now. Like, that's crazy that they played in Glendale for 20 years and it was like problems the entire time. Like, that's what makes us all have PTSD with this when it comes to this team. Yeah. But it's a little crazy. I mean, you went through the referendum just like I did. Did you have the same PTSD that I did when you were reading about these votes rolling in the Tempe polls?
Yeah, I had nothing to do the night of the referendum. So I actually drove to Nassau Coliseum the night that the results came out. And there was a few people there just standing outside the Coliseum. And I was kind of interested to see if there was going to be like a gathering or anything. And it turned out it was like me and maybe 10 other people. And it was sad, and drove home like just really upset, thinking, oh God, like they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I can tell you that Coyotes, the fan base in Arizona, has a lot of similarities with this Islander one, which is that it's small. It's the butt of every joke. and there's a bunch of vultures.
Yes.
Especially in one city that we'll talk about a lot later, that just can't help but just to pick at the bones of this thing.
Yeah.
I think the big difference between the two fan bases right now is the Islanders fan base has grown because of success. We make fun of the whole grow the game cliche, and the way you grow the game is your team and your market is good. Then you will see more people show up, and that will cause them to become hockey fans at large and watch more games and whatever. And the Coyotes just haven't had that success at all. Like, they have been bad for a little while here. And outside of that run to the Western Conference Final. Was that 2012 when the Kings dumped
yeah,
him out?
That was when they went to the
Mike Smith the Kings. And
yeah,
Radim Vrbata kind of guys. But yeah, had the Islanders not had much success of the past 5, 6, 7 years, our fan base would be a lot smaller. I can tell you that right now, and look a lot less kind of encouraging in terms of like the amount of young people who are watching and whatever. So I do feel really bad about the whole thing, and it's, I'm rooting for them to stay there because I, unlike people in Toronto or Ranger fans or fans of a team like the Kings or the Canucks, your team is never going to move. Like you don't know that dread of something you have no control over just going to shit and a team being taken from you.
Yeah.
Right. Like that is, it's, you don't have any control. Like that's, it's so bad.
Yeah.
That feeling. And Coyotes fans are going through that right now. And they've been going through it for a long time. And not only is it terrible to have to deal with that, but then it's horrible because you have to go watch as people who think they know what it's like and know better and know what's best for the league, like these people who cosplay the NHL marketing department, like why is this game on at 8:30 p.m. Eastern? They should have moved it to 5:30. That's how you grow the game. Okay, like you're not you're just some person on Twitter with like 12,000 followers that doesn't give you the right to tell the Arizona Coyotes they don't just fans that the team needs to move.
Oh, great. Conference final with Florida and Carolina. Great. Who's going to want to watch that? Well, that's not your problem, dude.
Yeah.
That's not your problem. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, it is. Or just don't watch it. But the the Coyotes, like their fans are just watch their team get dragged through the mud.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who, it might have been Elliot Friedman or I can't remember who kept saying this. Like, oh, you know what? I think we're all just pretty tired with this whole thing. You think you're tired?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Like, what about like the 18-year-old Coyotes fan who's just like, wow, this team that like I grew up with, my childhood team, is now being ripped from me through no fault of my own.
Yeah.
Once again, it's not their fault. Even like the stuff that Brooks was talking about, that's not the fans' fault that. Right. The owners are cheaping out on travel or going Mike Milbury style and making them, cook their own meals at hotels and Chef Boyardee for the Coyotes. Like, that's not the fans' fault. That is not, like, they don't deserve that to happen to them. And that's why I don't really care what team it is at all. But whenever there's a situation like this, I will always root for that team to stay. Always. And it's because of what happened to the Islanders.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And again, if they wanted him to move, they would have. But I just love the fan casting to make, oh, just move him to Houston. Okay, where? And who's going to own the team? Because the guy who owns the Rockets, he didn't want hockey. Like, we've been over this. Oh, but now they can move him to Salt Lake City. The owner of the Jazz or whoever has talked to Gary Bettman. Okay, what did he say? Did he say, I want to own a team? Like, I want the Coyotes? No, he probably wants an expansion team. I don't know. Who knows? And then enough with the Quebec City already. Like, again, like they would have had a team there. That's not growing the game. Like, putting a team in Quebec is not growing the game. That is feeding nostalgia, because people in Quebec already like hockey, right? Like, they don't need to sell hockey to people in Quebec, at least I'm assuming. They need to sell hockey to the people of Arizona. It would start with a good team that has a place to play. But once it got there, I think people would come because they like the Coyotes and they've been there for a long time. Like you said, there are fans of all year. There are people that have been season ticket holders since they played at America West Arena, and it was Tkachuk and Roenick and Teppo Numinen and all these old Winnipeg Jets, right? So it can happen as long as it's good, and it's good. They're going to need a place to play and some patience, and maybe they will get good at some point. But it just sucks. I mean, again, I get Friedrich's point, we're all tired of it, but we're not Coyotes fans, and we don't know, even us as Islanders fans who have a degree of empathy for a team going through a similar thing that we went through, we still don't know. It's, we're closer to them. We could get it, but we'll never fully know. And so we just have to, see what happens. But we'll see what happens. I do think they will stay, but I figured once that vote happened, I'm like, yeah, we got to talk about this because I guarantee there are Islanders fans that are like,
because I even the pre vote stuff, like, this is, I think Frank Saravalli was tweeting, like, I'm not even kidding, this is the most important day in Arizona Coyotes franchise history. And I shuddered because I was like, I could see that tweet from, like, maybe Darren Drager or someone, you know, sure. Like, this is the biggest day in Islanders history. Yeah.
Right.
No shit.
That referendum was why I joined Lighthouse Hockey as a commenter, because it was the number one place to get updates on the referendum. So it was a big deal. But ultimately, it was the first of many, 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 many stops.
Yeah, now a casino's going there. So
yeah. The irony of ironies.
That's the
casino. Oh, we don't want traffic and the water. Our water bills are going to go up. All right. Well, now you can spend more on water and you can go lose money at the casino. So there you go. It works out both ways. Great job, everybody. We are going to take a short break and we're going to come back.
Oh, wait, actually, can't not mention this.
Oh, please.
Speak, because it's a good segue.
Hmm.
The New York Islanders made a huge mistake the other day when they posted a picture of Kate Murray
on
their Twitter feed with Sparky.
Oh, man. I can't believe I forgot about this.
You know what? It's not our fault because of what we're about to talk about just completely threw us into a different dimension. But
in case anybody's wondering, they were planting trees in Hempstead and the Islanders were there. Sparky was there and Kate Murray was there. And I saw that picture and I didn't even realize that was her. And when you pointed it out to me and I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Like,
that's the only response you can really
have. There was a great response under the tweet, and I'm so sorry. The person, I can't pull it up just right now without typing on my keyboard and sounding bad, but somebody was like, all right, where's the picture of Kurt Muller? Kurt Muller.
Like that. All lined up, right?
Yeah, it should have been Murray, Kirk Muller, Dale Hunter.
Yeah,
like just all of them arm in arm.
There's
just like a couple things you can, and I get like the person running, it's not the person running this social media account's at fault, right? Like it's not, but it's just, if you're the Islanders and Kate Murray is coming to something as innocuous as just planning, like the most mundane kind of goodwill photo opportunity things, you can just be like, you just can't be in any of the pictures. Oh, and if she says why, you can say, you could look, how about because there's a casino going in where the Islanders used to play and everybody's mad.
Right. How about you literally try to just block the team from building anything? Let alone, you know, a new arena and whatever Charles Wong wanted to build. Like, the reason, you know, the reason this took so long to get here was because of you, or at least, you know, you and other people. So, yeah, I can admit that. You talk about things. I mean, we talked about Lane Lambert really kind of flying under the radars outside of Islanders country. I mean, this picture would only have triggered Islanders fans who are like, wait a minute, is that Kate? Yeah. Well,
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's. I like to think that whoever's in the Sparky suit was kind of muttering under their breath a stream of curses and insults
and
stuff like that while he was standing next to them. They were standing next to her taking a picture. So, but yeah, there you go. That was fun. But like you said, that was a little minor thing, kind of a funny thing that happened on Friday. But whoo boy, things went off the rails real quick in the hockey world, and we're going to talk a lot about that on the other side. We got to give the people what they want, in the words of AEW commentator Excalibur. So we will do that. So join us on the other side. If you want to hear this podcast without the obtrusive corporate commercial interruptions, head over to patreon.com/islandersanxiety to sign up for one of our subscription tiers. Plans start as low as $2 a month, and you get ad-free versions of our podcast, plus bonus podcasts where we're going to be recording our Country Club Atmosphere non-hockey podcast right after this. You get Mike's newsletter. You get my Islanders book club. You get you will get exclusive early access to Islanders Award winners season 2 starting this summer, all if you sign up at patreon.com/islandersanxiety. So do that today. You'll get a summer's full of Islanders Anxiety content, and you can't go wrong. It's great. And you won't have to hear commercials like this one, but meet us on the other side. All right, thanks.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And now a word from our favorite sponsors. First, as always, VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, jerseys, and more, featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. If you spend $50 or more, you could use the code 4CUPS, that's F-O-U-R-C-U-P-S, to get a free The Island coffee mug or pint glass or an Islander's Anxiety puck. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Go there today, spend $50, use 4CUPS, and you get a free gift. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a Rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All of them are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and are available at your local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. The fine folks at FOCO have done it again. They have a new bobblehead with Brian Trottier and Matt Barzell on it. It's called the Then and Now Bobblehead. It is very, 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 very limited to only 72 pieces. So go to FOCO.com. Put the link in the description and pre-order one today. Do not wait. It's really cool. If you've been an Islanders fan a long time and you saw Brian Trottier and you're watching Matt Barzell, it's a cool bobblehead to have. And that is from FOCO.com. Okay. Let's, you know, it's funny that we did over an hour on the Maple Leafs last week and their latest spectacular playoff flame out. And the response was great. People really enjoyed it. We obviously had a lot of fun doing it, and so we're going to do it again. Full disclosure, we were going to put out a Leafs episode just for patrons, because believe it or not, we still had some stuff to say, even after clearing the decks last week. But then Friday happened, and we decided, no, we got to do this on the main show, because everybody needs to hear it. In case you've been in the woods, or perhaps off the grid for a few days, the Maple Leafs announced on Friday that Kyle Dubas would not be returning as general manager. And this has hastened. It didn't start here, but it has hastened a thing that Mike has christened a very, very nice and cool and hilarious title. So would you please tell us what you call this era of Maple Leafs hockey?
The Great Unhinging.
And that is 100% accurate, because people are literally coming unhinged at not only the Dubas news, but the news prior. So I'm going to start by asking you, where were you when you heard that Kyle Dubas would not be returning as the Maple Leafs GM next season?
I was actually just walking into my parents' house with lunch. My daughter, Isla, goes there basically every day. My mom watches her while I work, and Emily works, and I try on Fridays to like come over and bring lunch for everybody. And so there I was with a bag of food from Louisiana Joe's in Oceanside, which is
nice,
fabulous. little sandwich shop on Merrick Road in Oceanside. And I took out my phone as I was getting out of the car, and I saw what was going on and immediately thought, Christ, how am I going to just explain what is going on to my parents as we're eating lunch with my daughter and my niece. And luckily, like, just the way timing worked out with some naps and my dad being on a work call. He works at the Bronx Zoo, and he was on a call. He was working from home that day, and he was on a call. So, like, things kind of, like, were delayed a little bit as I walked in. So I had a couple minutes to
digest.
Yeah.
Be all in. Yeah.
Digest before digesting. And then they must have just been like, wow, he's in such a good mood. What got into Michael? Like, he's just an incredible mood. Maybe it's just Friday. And holy moly.
Yeah.
You know what? To be honest, I was thinking, okay, like, just kind of click around, see what's going on. But because you know that the best part of all this is going to be the ripple effects.
Right.
You know, whether it's the Shanahan press conference, which we'll get into, but yeah. Or just, like I said, the unhinging of everybody from Toronto and around Toronto. You know, that's going to take some time. So you enjoy the lunch and you're not going to miss anything. Mm. And by the time I got home, everybody was unhinged. Everybody. Like, there are so many people that should have had the cops called on them that day.
Right. Yeah. It's, no, that's true. And unhinging is the best way to put it, because you're talking about writers, professional and amateur. You're talking about podcasters, broadcasters, journalists. You're talking about just fans on Twitter. People have come completely unglued. And from the Leafs perspective, so I was just on Twitter. I was working, and I saw this tweet from Elliot Friedman come over that the Leafs would not be retaining Kyle Dubas. And of course, I had to click on it and make sure it was actually Elliot Friedman, because he doesn't have a blue check mark anymore. Thanks a lot, Elon, you fucking idiot. But in any event, it was Friedge. And of course, it was followed by the usuals, you know, his colleagues, all saying the same thing. And you could kind of see the unhinging happening kind of in real time, just on social media. And it was swift. It was hilarious. People were enjoying it who aren't Leafs fans. And it's continued all weekend, which is really kind of the astonishing thing. And we can get into the Brendan Shanahan thing now. So, you know, this all happens. Like,
before you do, I actually want to say one thing. So on Thursday, before this happened, I was walking Elvis, and I was thinking, kind of just reflecting on the Leafs being eliminated, and this at this time, the kind of the Monday press conference from Dubas, and the uncertainty, and the fact that everyone was kind of resigned to the fact that the core four would be broken up, and
which, by the way, had been like picked through all week up until
And I was finally kind of at the end of the coverage of that, of the Dubas stuff, of the chain of going line by line of his press conference, of the media availabilities from Austin Matthews and such. I was finally at the end of that. And I was just walking Elvis, and I was thinking, I'm so grateful that this is happening. You know, I didn't think it could get to be this good. I didn't think, you know, I knew that had the Leafs got eliminated in the first round, or even done something funnier like they did this season, you know, things would be good. It would be fun. And I felt that I it would be great, but it wouldn't be something we haven't seen before. Right. And then we would just go through this whole charade again. And I really was grateful, and it wasn't lost on me that I was very scared that this team was about to go on a run. They didn't, and it's been hilarious since. And I thought, and this I didn't say anything because I was walking Elvis, who is a dog and doesn't talk. So I didn't say it out loud. But in my head, I said to myself, I don't know how this could get better.
Yeah, right.
I don't. I when you consider everything that goes into where we got from 2018 to that moment where it was. People were running, trade one of these guys, don't care who it is, fire the coach, whatever. And then the Dubas press conference I seriously thought to myself, I know exactly where I was when I had the thought too. I know exactly what street I was crossing. And I thought, I don't know how this could get better.
Right.
And then it did. And it didn't just get better. It got like chapters.
Yeah.
It was basically a teacher coming in and canceling school. That was how good it was.
Yeah.
Like just first day back from Christmas break. By the way, no more school for the rest of the year.
It was very hard to work. I got to be honest with you at that point. And then you talk about like, how can I explain to my, you know, your family? I would have had to explain to my bosses why a man losing his job 2,000 miles from where I live would have like distracted me from doing my job. Which is like really embarrassing. At least your family knows you, right? My bosses know me too, but like this is strange even for them.
We could have had a press conference and explained.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, it did get much better, and then it got even better still with the Brendan Shanahan press conference. So he comes out, and basically this press conference. And if you haven't listened to it or watched it, I highly recommend it. It's about 15 minutes long. It's on YouTube. The Leafs account, you know, has it, and again, to bring up a point that you made last week and is still 100% accurate, we get that we're enormous losers by watching another team's press conference, you know, another team's general manager talk about why he didn't retain there, or team president talk about why he didn't retain the general manager. We get that. This is no way for a person to spend their Friday evening. But there I was doing this, and he basically gives a sort of day by day and in some cases hour by hour breakdown of how he got from – you know, Kyle Dubas doing a postseason press conference on Monday to being out of a job on Friday. And it's basically worked out to Shanahan had told Dubas, like, you know, we don't really need to do a thing. Let's talk first before we address the media. He was like, no, the players and coaches are addressing the media. I want to do it too. And Shanahan was like, all right, well, I guess that makes sense. And this was when Dubas started talking about how rough this season was on his family, how he wasn't sure what, you know, his feelings were towards coming back. And this started the process in Shanahan's mind of like, huh, this is a little bit weird. And maybe this guy doesn't want to be, you know, our general manager anymore. And so Shanahan talked about how they went back and forth. And eventually his owner, so Shanahan had come to Dubas earlier. I'm doing this all from memory, by the way. So Shanahan had gone to Dubas earlier in the season about signing a contract extension, and said, like, listen, we're not going to sign you to extension right now. We'll get back to it later on. Kyle was fine with that. That was in September or whatever. Then in March, he went to him and said about signing a contract extension. He was like, okay, we'll talk to my agent with the idea of not being distracted. So the agent and Shanahan went back and forth over the details and came to this idea that they were going to do an extension just after the season. But then Monday's press conference happened. Shanahan all of a sudden is having doubts. He talks to Dubas. He talks to his agent. The agent comes back with like a higher contract demand. He's like, really? Dubas is like, no. He sends him an email saying, hey, man, I really do want to be GM of the Leafs. And Shanahan's like, yeah, I don't know about that. He said he slept on it. He woke up. He went to the Ford Performance Center, which Shanahan said 50 times during this 12-minute press conference. He said the word Ford Performance Center. So if you didn't know where the Leafs practice, now you know. And basically informed Dubas that he would not be retaining, his services would not be retained by the Leafs. And so, again, we went from a week of people, you know, kind of examining Dubas's words to now a weekend, and I'm sure a week coming up, of people examining Shanahan's words. And it has led to some takes that are completely insane. Like you said, it's just people that just have completely come unhinged, and they are looking at this through a million prisms and lenses. And it's crazy. It's like crazy. Cause there's two camps, really. There's the Shanahan camp and the Dubas camp, and you're kind of in one or the other. And so I have some clips here. Let's start with the most pro Dubas people on the planet, which are the guys who write at The Athletic. So this is Leafs Talk. It's James Myrtle and Jonas Siegel. So, I mean, I'll ask you, where do you want to start? We talked about the clips before. We have the bit about wanting a break. We have the bit about not getting to ask questions. Where would you like to start?
Let's start with the part where they talk about how they find it incredibly strange that somebody admitting to being burnt out at their job would cost them that job as the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I guess, yeah, play the clip because I have to jump right in after that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the clip. So listen to this.
Who doesn't in many lines of work, and every line of work, doesn't have like some days where you're just like, man, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
I thought that Dubas's press conference was very raw and emotional, and they had just, I think it was,
yeah,
he did seem a little bit burnt out,
yep,
which I think is okay at the end of the season. I mean, I think it's just natural. I mean, you and I are going to be burnt out at the end of the season
out right now, my friend.
And we'll see how much of this comes out. Part of what Dubas was burnt out by was just the dysfunction that he was dealing with, the relationship with Shanahan, the everything that's here. It could well come down to that Dubas feels, I mean, he's going to get a job somewhere else and he's probably going to be happier somewhere else, you know?
So,
and have more autonomy. I mean, maybe he'll be hired as a president somewhere and then he can be the Shanahan somewhere else.
Okay. So, yeah, they're like, you know, I mean, who doesn't feel burnt out at their job? Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
But most of us don't have to give, like, you know, postseason press conferences to a room full of gathered reporters that's going to be on YouTube for the rest of our lives. Like, we just kind of go on vacation or something. So also, a lot of us don't have free agents that are going to, you know, have contract changes and stuff coming up in, 3 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that. So, yeah, this is crazy. I mean, so you listen to this. So what was your takeaway in listening to this?
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
That they even just said this. For one, I think the relationship between these two podcasters is boss and not boss, like a direct report.
Yeah,
right? Isn't James Myrtle Mr. Toronto Athletic?
I think he's the editor. Yeah, of that section.
So I found it incredibly funny that dynamic is going on at play here. But yeah, like you said. Everyone feels burnt out at their job. And if you then went and admitted that in any fashion to publicly, you would be fired and everybody would say, geez, yeah, I get it, but you can't do that. Like you can't ever say something like that. And so here we have a guy who is looking to sign an extension. Get a raise, all the while failing, right? This is a failure,
yeah.
this era. I think Steve Dangle had a YouTube video where he called it Kyle Dubas, an era wasted.
That's great. Oh, man.
Yeah. So here's this guy, yeah, completely failed, didn't get this team that's perennially a Stanley Cup favorite. Past game five of the second round in his 5 years. And he's going on talking about how it's been tough on him and his family, which everybody then took and said, you know, we empathize with that and we get it. It's a tough job, forward facing job. It seemed like he was changing the narrative. He was spinning everything.
Yes. 100%.
There was an article written by one of those two guys, like the next day, about how Kyle Dubas had wrestled leverage in the negotiations back from this. And the fact that these guys thought it was bizarre that an employer would fire an employee for giving a press conference to millions of people talking about how he's not sure if he's going to be committed to the job.
Right.
I'm talking unhinged, like the unhinged here. Like there's a group of people that have just come completely, like you said, unglued. Lost the plot. That to me might have been the most concerning thing I heard all week. Yeah. Like that how can you not figure that out?
Right.
That this is some billion-dollar corporation would be a little worried that their maybe second most important person besides Austin Matthews is wavering.
Right.
And admitted it to a frenzied media contingent, which included you guys.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get to that media contingent in a second, because that's going to be our second clip. But the thing about this whole show, and it's only like 35 minutes long, is that at no point do they ever even almost come close to blaming Dubas for any of these Leafs failures over the last 5 years. At no point are they like, well, you know, we did trade a first round pick for Nick Foligno, like that kind of stuff. Or like, you know, did they really need, like, they never broach like the Tavares contract, which we'll talk about in a second. They never talk about how they had, you know, their goalies were, I mean, Ilya Samsonov played fine, I guess, but like Matt Murray's still on the, you know, that gambit did not work out, the Matt Murray thing. Yeah. And he's still here.
Peter Mrazek the year before that.
Right. Yeah. And it's just been this constant, you know, the kind of airdropping in of tough guys who then just don't do anything for a while. Like, again, like Mike said, this team has played five games past the first round once in the last, you know, 20 whatever years. And they were down 3-0 to the Panthers at one point. None of this ever comes up. To them, the bad guy in this situation is Brendan Shanahan. He's the guy who did not let, you know, Dubas did not give him time to come to a decision, did not give him the extension earlier. Myrtle wrote an article later talking about how Shanahan had blocked moves that Dubas had wanted to do. And people are like, what moves? Like, because they're going to get Kale McCarr for a third round pick or something. And Shanahan's like, no, don't do that. Like, it's crazy. And then they keep bringing it back to ownership too. Now, again, the Leafs do have a weird ownership situation. They're owned by two competing telecom companies. There's a whole board. So, you know, whenever you've got to make a decision, you got to talk to Shanahan, but then you got to also talk to all these other guys and I get that's probably frustrating. If you've ever been in a situation where like you have multiple bosses, like it does suck. Right. And imagine that times 10, and it's a huge, like you said, front facing job. And so I get that too, but this, to them, all of the failures of this era of Leafs hockey are the fault of Brendan Shanahan. None of them are the fault of Kyle Dubas. None at all. Like, or, you know, they didn't even talk about the players really. And we'll get to those guys in a second, but let's get back to the press conference. So here's the other clip I wanted to play where Jonas Siegel talks about how Shanahan didn't really take any questions. And this is sort of like the tone of the whole episode is like, this man, you know, just wants to, you know, get his narrative out there and his one side of the story. And, you know, that's it. And so that's what we have to go with and take at face value. So here's that clip right now.
It's going to be interesting to see how much transparency we get into what happened behind the scenes.
Well, let me speak to transparency. I can tell you, as someone who was there for Kyle Dubas's press conference and there for Brendan Shanahan's, they cut off questions very, very, very quickly. They did not want a lot of questions answered or asked. Shanahan spoke for about 12 minutes off the top with that timeline you mentioned, and then spoke, I think, about 12 minutes after that, just on questions. So this was mostly, or half of this was Shanahan just basically talking, and then a lot of questions were left unanswered. I didn't get to ask a question. I'm sure a lot of others didn't get to ask questions. So
what would you have asked, Jonas?
I see, the one thing I still don't understand, and he alluded to this, I had a few questions I wanted to ask, but the one thing I don't understand, why was Kyle Dubas not extended before the season? And maybe that's an ownership thing, but
I'm pretty sure that it was, but
he talked around it. He said he went into Kyle's office and he said, you're not being extended. I don't know why.
But Shanahan can't get up there and throw ownership under the bus. So even if that is what happened, that's not what he's going to say.
Okay, well, I don't understand that. Because then all of a sudden, in the spring, all of a sudden they want to bring him back. Like, that decision not to extend him, James, is the crux of why they're in this position. I mean, one of the questions I was asking myself, and I can ask you, let's say they had extended Kyle Dubas, right? They had just operated like normal teams do, or normal good teams.
Give him a 2 or 3 year extension or whatever.
Would this have happened? Would he have been fired?
No.
So
the best part of this is obviously like, well, what question would you have asked Jonah? Or Jonas, excuse me. And it's like, well, I would have asked why he wasn't signed to an extension last year. Dude, because they didn't make it out of the first round. Like, what the hell kind of stupid question is that? That's your question? Why don't you think he would have signed? Because they want to see if they can get out of the first round. Like, his point is that they wanted to sign him before the playoffs anyway. So then the playoff situation might not have mattered, but I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe it changed. I don't know. It's just, these guys are clearly against, they just, to them, Shanahan is the villain here. And to an extent, ownership as well. Dubas did nothing wrong.
Yeah. And it's not just Shanahan and and ownership. It's anybody who thinks
right
that Kyle Dubas wasn't the right general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Right.
Like, you are now, this is part of the unhinging, is that if you don't believe that,
right,
you're basically a blight on society.
Yeah. You're on the wrong side of history, buddy.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, like, you're right. Jesus, it's becoming very there's two clear sides of the aisle, and there's one group that is just shouting at the other group and saying, like, oh, well, if you don't think Kyle Dubas is supposed to be the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, like, what do you think, like, you know, owning a cat should be elite? Like, it's
right.
I don't know what they're trying to paint here, people, as like that you being a Toronto Maple Leaf fan or someone from the outside just saying, yeah, well, maybe he probably should have won a couple more playoff series.
Right.
Makes you some sort of absolute psychopath who's should be, you know, locked up, banned from being able to speak their mind and all sorts of stuff. It's become very, very, very startling. But from our side of the aisle, which is not even, we're just, you know, there are these two, if you imagine it like a parliament, and then you know how there's that upper deck?
Right.
You know, we're sitting at the upper deck and I'm just asking for more popcorn. We're just having the time of our life here, watching these factions just completely tear each other apart.
Right.
And this entire podcast, I think, Talking Leafs or whatever.
Oh, Leafs Talk, yeah.
Leafs Talk with James Myrtle and Jonas Siegel. The entire thing basically sounded like two guys that were hoping that Kyle Dubas was listening to that podcast.
Yep. Yeah.
Saying, you know, hey, Kyle, we got your back, man, because we know you got ours.
Yeah.
Like, we're in this together.
The tone of the whole thing was, the mean suits fired my buddy. That's it. Oh, man, that sucks. Like, if you know a friend who got laid off, you're like, oh, man, that sucks. These fucking, you know, suits, they did that to you, man. Assholes. Like that. That was the tone of the whole thing, basically.
Except your buddy.
Right.
You get him out there and you think he tells you what happened. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you did that?
Right.
You might have wanted to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we came in under expectations for like 7 years in a row. And,
and they still wanted to keep you around? Yeah. Okay. And then what'd you do? Oh, I asked for a lot more money publicly and used my family as a bargaining chip. Oh, yeah. You know.
Right. No, publicly, by putting out like a big publicly. You know, yeah, it's a whole thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, what are you gonna do? You know, like that kind of It's crazy. And this is just one example. We have another one, and you talk about the sort of warring factions. We had one podcast that was sort of both. This was sort of my go-to, which is Real Kipper and Bourne, which is on Sportsnet. It's Nick Kyprios and usually Justin Bourne. Justin Bourne, great guy, former guest on Weird Islanders, the podcast, picked a hell of a week to go on vacation because he's going to come back and it's going to be like that gift from Community of Donald Glover walking in with the pizzas and everything is on fire. He's basically coming back to that. But so in Bourne's place for this Friday episode was Gord Stellick. Now, for those who don't know, Gord Stellick was the Leafs general manager in the 80s. He was actually the youngest guy to be named GM of an NHL team before Dubas. He was like Leafs general manager and he was like 30 years old. Of course, the whole era was a total disaster. He got fired and then did what anybody would normally do in this situation, which is become a longstanding member of the Leafs media. So he's been doing that for a long time. And so he was sitting in, and I'm going to go to the later clip first, and then we'll get to the other one because it is relevant to a friend of ours. And so at one point they were talking about Dubas's kind of qualifications and basically getting to what Siegel and Myrtle did, which is like, did this guy deserve to get another year based on the performance of the last 5 years? And so Kyprios asks their producer, Sam, who's the voice of the fan in this situation, what he thinks Dubas's best move was. So I'm going to play the clip right here.
I think if you're doing it in a vacuum and not looking at it now, it would be Tavares. And what that brought, right? Wouldn't you say?
No.
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 It is his best move.
Maybe the one of his worst moves.
Well, yeah, now it is. But
no,
if they had have got
no,
over
the, it was
yeah, well,
back
you,
then,
okay, no,
too.
Wait, no, whoa, I got to give the middle here. I got to give the middle. Kippy, everyone loved that.
No.
You cannot fault him in the slightest.
I was on a desk. I was on a desk with Doug McClain, Darren Millard,
I want to see
Elliot
the tape.
Friedman.
Same tape with Johnny Goodrow. You got to give me that tape.
First thing we said is $11 million. What is that going to do to Matthews and Marner? Go find the tape. I swear to God.
Okay.
The first thing we said is, I don't know if this makes any sense to get this guy at $11 million because all you did was just jack up the price on Matthews and Marner.
Okay, hold on here. Now, so first of all, I hallelujah thought that was a great day, okay? And I think most of the public did, okay? He said that day that he had talked to everybody else, and my understanding was, and I said it all summer, was that Matthews, Marner, Nylander, they were all in sync. He later said, geez, I should have spent more time with Lewis Gross, Nylander's agent. Like, he got handed the keys at the 11th hour. Lou had done most of the, you know, like, he had a very difficult time. So after that, he should have hit. Austin would have signed that first week of July at more term, okay? Because John Tavares was the story. Then the season started, and by the first game, the rock stars were Mitch and Austin again. And now you were bleeped.
You just signed a guy to an $11 million, and he's not the rock star to start the season?
He was the rock star of the summer. He was the rock star. Kawhi Leonard was the basketball.
I'll tell
John
you exactly
Tavares.
What happened. Matthews and Marner saw Tavares go in and say, I'm not backseating to Tavares. I'm sorry. Matthews did. Said, I'm your guy. You got to pay me more than that.
So you know, my favorite is when Kiprios is like, no. That's it. And then, you know, Stelic jumps in to like kind of fight for Tavares's honor here and talk about how great it was. By the way, later on, they do play the clip of Kiprios saying on July 1st, 2018, like, I don't know about this. It's a lot of money. So Kiprios was not wrong. But this to me was so funny because Kiprios is funny because like he's, I don't want to call him the Debbie Downer, but he's the guy who's always like, what have these guys done? They haven't done anything. And it's like, yeah, he's right. You know, it's a weird position to take from a guy who played for the Leafs, you know, like it's crazy, but he's our guy. And it's funny to hear him kind of go up against. He's like, Doug McClain was a guest earlier on the show. And he and Stelic were talking about how what a prestigious position this job is. You're the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. What's a bigger job than that? Guys, you haven't won a Stanley Cup in over 50 years. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Like, I don't know. Wouldn't you rather be the general manager of the Lightning right now? Like, you know, I don't know, just as an example. But anyway, it was good. Did you get to listen to this one? Because I know you had made the rounds for all of them.
Yeah, I touched them all. This was great, and the thing I love about Kiprios in these situations, and I only listen to these shows after the Leafs lose.
Oh, 100%.
They're
no fun when they're winning. They're only fun when they lose.
Yeah. And Kiprios is always the guy who's like takes it a step further. So you know, I remember when the Leafs struggled earlier in the season, they like came back from California and they were really struggling and. I was listening to a show and the other two guys are like, yeah, it's, you know, it's October 30th, Kipper. Like, and he just is like, yeah, but they are coming off a season where they got eliminated again. And the coach looks like he's lost and you got this guy doing this and Tavares looks terrible, all this stuff. Like, that's why he's our guy. Like, this is the guy who would really benefit from listening to this segment of our show. Cause he probably is like, why on earth are there people, not just fans. First of all, why does this guy have a cult following among the fans is one thing. That is definitely a question that at some point will need to be answered. And people are going to have to go through a lot of kind of pitching backwards therapy to kind of undo themselves from wherever they ended up because of their absolute bizarre infatuation with this guy.
Right.
And most of them are professional hockey cover people who cover the sport professionally. He must think it's totally bizarre.
Right.
And is probably feels like he's taking crazy pills and he's you know, he's an old school, you know, the cliche hockey man kind of guy. So people can just paint him as lazily paint him as the Don Cherry light kind of folks of this show and just be like, yeah, well, of course he would say that. He's a caveman. No, he's just pointing out that this team didn't win a playoff series for 19 years. And then they finally did.
Yeah.
And it still became, and it got worse. Like that, he's pointing that out while everyone else is pointing out for some reason that this guy in charge led them to the regular season record, not once, but twice and whatever. And he must think he's taking crazy pills sometimes. Like, why am I the only one pointing out? So to hear him just immediately just go, no.
Right.
He keeps endearing himself further to me, and I want, like, it's the type of thing where I just want to write him a letter on behalf of, you know, people who are on this side or who are in that upper deck of not on any side of the aisle. And like, dude, it feels good to hear somebody say that.
Yeah.
Not because even like Justin Bourne will get like caught up in it, like, yeah, like, you know, but if you look at these numbers and they just didn't get the goaltending or whatever, like, you could say that after one series, but you lost to like Blue Jackets and the Canadiens back to back years and still somehow didn't like get nobody's head rolled. Then you lost again and still were defiant. Like, you can't really keep saying it. And Kiprios is the only one to point that out.
Yeah. Bourne is regularly. At least, he comes at, he kind of, I don't want to say making excuses, but like, he looks at it from an analytical, perhaps a luck perspective, like shit happens kind of, you know, player's perspective sometimes of getting through. The other guys like Stelic, like Doug McLean, like John Shannon, these other guys, they look at it from a pure, like, pompous historical point of view. Like, how could this guy want to leave the Toronto Maple Leafs? Yeah. Like, who would, as if no other team exists. You know, like, we've been through this again with the Islanders. Like,
and that was the other thing, kind of tying back to the original thing, the original clip that we posted. He's not complaining about like a job in a coal mine.
Right. Yeah.
This job was hard on my family.
Yeah.
This was such a taxing year. Dude.
Yeah.
You guys had the easiest regular season of anybody in the league. Like,
a point Bourne made on a previous episode. Yeah. Right.
And, It's a job where you have more resources than basically anybody, like 99% of people on the planet don't have the resources you do. Oh, it was tough on my family. Like, you can ask, hey, can I have, you know, this help to help, you know, my family, my kids or whatever. And this is not some guy going down into the mines at 6 a.m. and coming up at 3 p.m. Yeah, like that's what was so bizarre going back to that thing. Like, how could he just get fired for just admitting that life is hard?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, because if anybody else on the planet did it, they would also get fired for doing that.
I mean, I do want to say that if we don't know what effect this had on his family. You know, Dubas hasn't spoken, so maybe we'll line later.
Well, that was the thing. Like, we didn't.
Right.
But then he emails Thursday night asking for the job back.
Right, yeah.
Which Shanahan pointed out. So I was like, okay, buddy. Like, I felt bad for you for a second there, and you lost me.
Because I wonder if, because the thing that when he kept bringing it up in his press conference, I thought to myself, remember when James Reimer was the goalie for the Leafs when they lost the Bruins? And his wife took a ton of abuse on Twitter, and then eventually hastened his trade to Florida, I believe. And I wonder if it's something along those lines, because I think his kids are little. So I don't know how much pressure there are on these little tiny kids. It's not like his kids are in high school or something. Like, I remember, I know for, you know, I've read things that Al Arbor's kids had a tough time in high schools and whatnot on the island before 1980, specifically May 24th of that year, you know, because it looked like things weren't going that well. So I, you know, there's a scenario where I can buy that, but it just came out of nowhere. And yeah, again, he was like all set to take the job again. But one person that is definitely not taking, well, he's taking some abuse, but not as much, and I'll explain in a minute, is the captain of the Maple Leafs, John Tavares. He obviously, we heard that clip before. That was the second time that Tavares had come up on the this episode of Kipper and Bourne. And it's funny to me that people are now like, well, this is an albatross contract. They got to get rid of him. They got to get him to, you know, waive his no movement clause, trade him to San Jose for Erik Karlsson, trade him to Detroit for a bag of pucks or whatever it is, get rid of him. Now, that's funny enough as it is, But I find it really interesting that he's not taking any abuse as the captain of the team. Like, he's nobody's saying, like, how have you not led this team past the second round of the playoffs in 5 years? Like, he had a great series against the Lightning this year. Good for him. But, like, then what? Like, that's it. And, you know, that's kind of par for the course. That's what he did for the Islanders, too. They had a great series against the Panthers, and then that was it. He was they got cooked in five games against the Lightning in the next round. But anyway, here's our final clip. This is, again, earlier from the same episode of Kipper and Bourne, but it's Kipper and Gord Stellick. And this is talking about the player interviews for the Leafs. And Kiprios is saying that, you know, these guys all say they want to be Leafs, but this is pretty normal. And Stellick, I don't know, maybe he just came back from the Phantom Zone or something, but it'll make a lot more sense when you hear the clip. I'm going to play it right now.
Two different teams.
But to Sam's point, that was the best part Monday from a Leaf point of view. The surprising part was Kyle's statement. Austin, for the first time, not being vanilla and saying, I'm looking to stay here for a lot of years. Like, he could have kept cards to the vest and just, you know, well, I'm going to talk, going to figure it out. But he actually expressed that, which I view as a positive.
Can I just say that, though? And listen.
Yeah.
After what I've seen the last few years with unrestricted free agents, go back and find the comments on with John Tavares with the Islanders.
Did he say that?
Go back and find Johnny Gaudreau. No,
John Tavares
Calgary.
Always kept it close to the vest. I don't know about Johnny Gaudreau.
They all, no one gave the impression that they didn't like where they were.
No, but they don't say anything. I know, but they don't offer up, I want to be here for many years.
I'll dig out some quotes for you, and they were all under the impression that they'll work something out, or they like it here, and
where I like Kawhi.
Let's just wait.
Kawhi Leonard never gave us 1 second.
And I'm not
doubt.
Saying that he won't resign, but I'm just saying, how can you truly trust it in today's world when it's as Kyle proved this week, it's all about the money.
So. Gord Stellick's thing apparently is not knowing that John Tavares told people he wanted to stay with the Islanders, which I mean, you talk about wanting to write Kiprios a letter. I wanted to jump into my computer and grab Gord Stellick by the collar and be like, sir, I don't want to call him dude or bro. Sir, I have 94,000 words, a quarter of which at least have John Tavares saying, I hope it works out. I've always maintained that I want to stay here. I'm excited for the future here. All that kind of stuff. And then he left. And good on Kiprios for being like, no, he said he wanted to stay there too. And he left. So Austin Matthews saying he wants to stay with the Leafs doesn't really mean a whole lot of a hill of beans until he actually signs a contract extension, right? Because they all say that kind of stuff. I was flabbergasted. I was shaking, physically shaking. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if I almost like messaged Bourne and being like, hey, dude, sorry to interrupt your vacation, but when you come back, tell Gord Stellick that he's out to lunch. You know, I didn't know what to do. I was looking for like his email address so I could email Gord directly. If everybody out there knows Gord Stellick, please tell him that he's wrong. We know of this. This is wrong. But I was just like, and again, this is the attitude. The attitude is the Leafs exist and nobody else does. And, you know, what happens to them is special. None of those player interviews, at least the clips that I heard, were anything different than what I've heard from a million Islanders teams before. And I'm sure I heard from a million other teams out there. They're just, yeah, we love it here. Well, why wouldn't you? You know, why wouldn't you love playing for this team? You're pampered, you're taken care of, you're making a lot of dough. So what if you never made it out of the second round of playoffs? Who cares? Like, it's not like anybody's getting fired or anything, right? I guess,
yeah.
I guess one person did.
And there was a great clip in the show where Stellick was, or producer Sam was just like, yeah, well, the culture... Yeah. At the Leafs is great. And
right.
Kiprios just cuts him off and goes, the culture stinks. They don't win. Like, that's why it stinks.
Yeah.
But yeah, and this that clip from Stellick, I think, in such a funny way, is exactly why we're spending another hour talking about this right. whole situation, which is, this is now the second clip this since the Leafs got eliminated where somebody has completely wrote some revisionist history about right. the Tavares thing. The other one was that Lou Lamoriello was the one that signed him, which was
yes. Oh my God. Another one.
JD Bunkus or something.
Yeah.
Like when did Dubas take over again? Like right after Tavares signed, right? Like Lou signed Tavares. Like, no, dude.
That was your boy.
No. It was actually the exact opposite.
Right.
He signed away from Lou.
Yeah.
But that's the point. Like, that's why this stuff is right now so delicious, is because we have to put up with this stuff. And just because, and if somebody says that with this kind of following, whether it's James Myrtle or JD Bunkus or Gord Stellick on this show or SiriusXM NHL Radio, whatever, you know, the people listening in, you know, Des Moines, Iowa or Saskatoon, they just listen to him like, oh yeah, that must be right, because these guys are the professionals and their job is to be right about this kind of stuff. And you're like, well, they're not. They're not right. He told John Tavares, told us a million times he was going to stay. And this clip relates to what in pre Shanahan's press conference, my favorite clip of the week before that was Luke Fox Jukebox did a couple of radio hits.
We finally got to him. It took an hour and 16 minutes.
I know, right?
To get to him.
Yeah. I can't believe we talked about Lane Lambert before Luke Fox Jukebox on an Islander show. He had a radio hit and with Kipper and Bourne and Jeff Marek, and the one with Marek was Friday before the press conference with Shanahan, and Jeff Marek rightly was pointed out, hey, this press release says the Leafs have decided to part ways with Kyle Dubas. Does that mean that means he was fired, right? And Luke Fox was like, no, nobody would. Who in their right mind would ever fire Kyle Dubas? That would be like a dereliction of duty. But a couple of days before that, when he was on with Kipper and Bourne after the Dubas stuff, he pointed out that, and I'm not kidding you, Austin Matthews sent a subtle message to Leafs fans in his postseason breakdown interview because he wore Toronto Maple Leafs gear while he did his interviews.
Wow. So
and
subtle.
That was a subtle message that he wants to be here.
I mean,
and
that's like,
it's
delusional.
This is the unhinging.
Yeah.
that is the team he plays for. That is the company he works for. Was he supposed to wear an Anaheim Ducks shirt?
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, that would not be subtle. Luke Fox Jukebox. That is just him wearing the clothes that he wears for work.
Yeah. That he had in his locker room before, you know.
Like John Tavares, I'm sure, at every Islanders press conference, including his last one, probably wore an Islanders shirt. Like, and if he did it, I don't think any of us would be like, hey, maybe we would have at the time. We were unhinged. Like, that was our unhinging. And it's funny that you think about the two. If that was our great unhinging and this is theirs, you just think about the complete difference of, A, the people who have become unhinged were fans.
Right.
Right? Like, you didn't see Arthur Staple or, like, Brian Compton doing, like going full Tiananmen Square at, you know, Maple Leaf Plaza in front of Brendan Shanahan's SUV driving him to Ford Performance Center. Like, they're just like, yeah, John Tavares signed with the Leafs. I don't know what to tell you. My job is to report the news, not cry because it happened. That's your job. And we did it.
Yeah.
There's an off-Broadway play about it. And so this their unhinging is not only are there fans, which you'd be like, oh, sure. Like, you like this general manager and you're upset that he's gone. You think that this is a bad decision for the team you were for. That stinks. I'm sorry. But the Joshua Cloaks and Luke Fox Jukeboxes of the world, their job isn't to become unhinged. Chris Johnston as well.
He wrote a real whopper for his NorthStarBets.ca that was also like dripping with just like, how could they do this? This is unbelievable. You know, they better know what they're doing. Like, that kind of thing.
The headline was, everybody's going to regret this.
I mean, It's great. But and so we should spend a word for the fans. We've been talking about like journalists, but you know, they've been going crazy, and I guess that's their right. But some of them have gone really crazy, and I'm not going to call out people specifically, but like I've seen a lot of takes that are like, well, you know, the regular season is really a better barometer of success for a team, you know. And in that case, you know, Dubas was very successful. Like they set many records, the Leafs did over the last 5 years. Yeah, okay. What did they win? They're like, what are we doing here? Like, what is the, we're really doing this now? Like, oh yeah, well, they won a bunch of games. They had 111 points or whatever. They had 105 points before he took over. When Lou was the GM, they had 100 points. And now, so in 5 years, they've gained 6 points in the standings. That's what you're talking about. That's what this whole thing was about. 6 standings points and, you know, one extra win in the second round. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I saw people being like, well, Dubas actually predates Lou. He was hired before Lewis. He was the AGM. Well, that's a bigger indictment.
It's just, yeah. Any way you slice it, it's crazy. Now, I do want to call you mentioned him before. I did listen to, what was it? It was Leafs Talk. I think that's the Sportsnet one with JD Bunkus and again, Sam McKee again. And I got to tell you, like that one I thought was actually fairly on the level. It's two guys. And they talked about a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here, just the fact that they didn't really win anything. And, you know, really maybe moving on from Dubas probably isn't the worst idea for them to get some new eyes. Now, the problem is you don't know what the future is going to be like. And that's a significant fear of like, what is the future going to be like? And, you know, with us, I mean, we went through it last year. Oh my God, you fired Barry Trotz. Like, what the hell? You know,
I want to just kind of talk about that real quick. Mm-hmm. I meant to bring that up earlier. Like when the Islanders fired Barry Trotz, people were mad.
Yeah.
And then they moved on.
Yeah. Right.
And there was no, once again, you didn't see Kevin Kurz or, you know, descend from the rafters and try to like kidnap Lou Lamoriello. Like it seems like people are doing a Brendan Shanahan right now. Like you want to talk about whose family's probably going through a taxing time right now. It's probably his.
Right.
Because his wife or and kids or Craig Janney's wife or whoever is probably wondering why is the head editor of the Athletic crying on our front lawn right now and has like a pitchfork and whatever. Like, but yeah, I mean, it sucked. We were very upset. We grieved when Barry Trotz was fired and we missed him and we still miss him and we appreciated him for his time. And then we just said, well, there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
Because it's not our decision who coaches the New York Islanders. It's our right as fans to be upset about it. And then it's the media's right to report and try to figure out why it happened.
Yeah.
And it was a totally normal reaction for a sports thing. I can't recall anybody becoming unhinged.
No,
like I was upset.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you didn't have anybody sort of like losing their mind and like kind of caping for and defending everything that he did. And over time, and again, I want to reiterate this, like over time, it became very clear that this was a hard year on Barry Trotz's family. And I'm not saying that to like slap Kyle Dubas in the face, but it really was. He lost his mom. He had a couple of daughters getting married. He had a whole lot of stuff going on. And so when we talk about Lou firing Barry and letting him go, to me, it was Barry was burnt out and Lou did him a favor by letting him go because he might not have been all in on what would have been the last season of his contract. And I think that probably is why Barry and Lou have still remained in close contact with each other, even after they let him go. And so, you know, he wanted to get into management. I guess he wanted to move back to Nashville. And so, you know, Lou let him go and took that bullet, whereas really Barry, it was, you know, wanted to kind of get out. I think he just had a lot more going on and he maybe couldn't have given his full attention to the Islanders. And it sucks because, again, we love Barry, but that makes a lot of sense. And so it's almost like if that's the case with Dubas, you know, I don't think it certainly hasn't come out that way, but I wonder if there's something similar like that. But for whatever reason, there definitely wasn't like, again, people were mad. Like, they were still mad all summer. Can't believe this has happened. But it was like fan mad. It was like people on Twitter or whatever being mad, podcasts being mad about it. But you didn't have like journalists going on podcasts and like literally laying out the reasons why this man should have kept his job. And he really was doing all the, my favorite thing about all this Dubas stuff is that I love when people are like, well, you know, we didn't really have a full view of his body of work. So you really couldn't have, you know, guessed that
how could we evaluate him?
How could we evaluate him? We only had 5 years as a general manager. Dude, 5 years. 5 years. Like, we had an evaluation of Barry Trotz's tenure as the Islanders. It was great. But, you know, if Lou felt that maybe he wasn't going to be there and he had other stuff going on and, you know, Barry would have appreciated being let go, then that's just how it works. But that's clearly not what happened here. So this has kind of been your Leafs, you know, Kyle Dubas roundup. The crazy thing is that, again, they have some serious contract issues coming up by July 1st. If Austin Matthews doesn't get a contract extension, his no trade clause kicks in on July 1st. So if they can't get him on an extension, they're either going to go into the season with a guy who's not signed and can't be traded, or they got to trade him. Mitch Marner has no movement clause, but people want to see him gone. William Nylander has no movement clause, but people want to see him gone, but he's only got 2 years left. Tavares is the guy everybody wants to see gone, but they can't get rid of him because he doesn't want to go. And he's got to have to waive a no movement clause. So this is going to get weird very, very quickly. And the list of guys who are up for, you know, or at least being considered has already been come down to guys like Brad Treliving. Brandon Pridham is the interim guy. He was like Dubas's sort of lieutenant, another numbers guy. So he's going to get the same treatment. Oh, I completely forgot to say Jason Spezza resigned, which is another thing that, like, oh my God, he's so loyal to Dubas. He resigned. Okay. Like,
well, that was another, it's been supernatural, this phenomena of this unhinging.
Yeah.
Because they had that guy, Mike McKenna from,
the goalie guy.
Yeah. He had a tweet where he was talking about how Spezza is like a Leaf through and through and has always wanted to like bring the Stanley Cup home to Toronto.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The guy who played for the Senators and Stars, he always wanted to bring it back to Toronto. What? Really?
Is like, you played in the same league as him when he was on other teams, I'm pretty sure. Mike McKenna bounced around. He might have been like a organizational teammate of Jason Spezza's with the Senators. Like, there's a decent chance. And he's a Leaf through and through.
Sure he is.
But this is what happens during this unhinging, is that this stuff just gets erased unless you're wearing blue and white.
Right.
And in which case you are become, you know, the Pope. And I think I said this to you about the Myrtle Siegel podcast, and then just the way Joshua Klokin has covered things at The Athletic as well. he wrote this like, here's what we know, like as if, you know, when Russia invaded Ukraine, like the New York Times puts out when a big story happens, right? They put out like but this just happened,
right?
You know, this bank just got robbed in New York City. Here's what we know, kind of thing. And it's just like a couple quick bullet points of, you know, we don't know who did it, whatever. And Joshua Cloak wrote one of those for Kyle Dubas getting fired, who's the general manager of a sports team. Kyle Dubas fired from Toronto Maple Leafs. Right. Here's what we know. And you're like, does this guy think he's like giving like a breaking news bulletin? Yeah. So you got that guy who thinks that what he's doing is he's reporting from, you know, the front lines of Bastogne or something and is like, you know, telling people how the offensive's going against the Nazis. Mm. And then you got the James Myrtle, Jonas Siegel guys who are just found out Santa Claus isn't real.
Yeah.
And they're trying to cope and be like, well, maybe he is.
Yeah.
Maybe maybe our parents don't know that he's real and it's actually been Santa that's been doing this.
I mean, Santa's my friend. I see him at the mall every year and I tell him what I want. So you can't, you know, I don't know how you could tell me he's not real. Right.
If Santa's not real, who got us Michael Bunting?
Oh, he's another guy. He's another guy in they're not going to re-sign him. Good. Good riddance list. Like, this guy, this was the guy everybody was like, they were aghast that he didn't win the Calder Trophy last year. And now it's like, well, screw him. He's gone. We're gone. By the way, The Athletic, by the way, is at this right now. It's a Leafs blog, basically, right now, with a section for other teams, because you got a couple of teams that are in the playoffs still. Of course, most of them don't have any writers. So, like, you know, their stuff kind of floats to the top. But the draft is over. Everybody else is quiet. And the Leafs are the only one making noise. So now it's like a Leafs blog with occasional little sprinkles of here and there of other teams. And it's great. This is exactly what I want for my subscription fee. So it's been a lot. And again, hopefully by the time you listen to this, it's still fresh. But I mean, a week from now, I mean, it's Sunday. We're talking by this time next week, they could have a new general manager and we could be in part three of this whole thing. Could be Brad Treliving. It could be Mark Hunter, who was the guy who was passed over in favor of Dubas all those years ago when they let Lou go. Maybe Dale Hunter becomes coach. Oh, yeah, that's another guy. Sheldon Keefe has no idea what's going on, whose boss is going to be, if he's even going to have a job. I mean, he's probably going to get let go. But there's a lot of ways that this can get really weird. And, of course, Shanahan was like, we want somebody with experience. So all of your sort of fantasy, you know, numbers guy, assistant GMs from around the league might as well need not apply, because they want a guy who's been in the job before. And Treliving was let go. Again, he stepped away. So now he's going to step into a bigger job even than Calgary. So it's a lot, and it's been entertaining, and it will continue to be entertaining. And then that leaves the question. So what happens to Dubas? We don't know. There was a story that he might get a call from the Penguins. But they're already kind of, Elliot Friedman has been talking about how they're already far down the line on their search for a new general manager. So to me, this is nothing. This is just the two teams that get high on their own farts the most coming together to create a story about nothing. So I don't know if that's going to happen. But, and, you know, I want to just address this right now. You're going to hear a lot about how much Dubas and Lou Lamoriello are close. Kevin Kurz already wrote an article about this. And I think we're going to hear more of this. And so I think there's probably a small chance that Dubas comes to work for the Islanders in some capacity, not necessarily general manager, but something, because he is tight with Lou, but you never know. He might get an opportunity, better opportunity someplace else. If he wants his family to be taken care of, well, hey, listen, we got the schools, you know, we got the schools here on the island. The kids love them. You know, your wife can hang out with the Islanders' wives. It seems like a great group. And really, it's, you know, you could live a quiet life here, Kyle. But I want to be very clear about something. And I've heard people say to me, why would you want him? Why would you want Dubas here? This sucks. But the only reason I say this is because of two things. One, again, the relationship with Lou, which is well documented. But two, Kyle Dubas coming to work for the Islanders would make a lot of people very, very angry. And that's the only reason I want it to happen. Yep. Absolutely 100% out of spite. Yep. That's it. That's my only reasoning. I mean, do you feel the same way? Yep. Like,
okay. We've been saying it. I mean, how many times have we said it this season on this podcast? Like, the funniest ending of this entire saga is
right.
Him coming to be the heir 100%. Apparent to Lou Lamoriello, his buddy. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility,
yeah,
because
definitely.
This week has been kind of an example of you have no idea in professional sports like what's coming next. You just don't. Don't know what these your team plays really well in the first period, then they go to the intermission and they come out a completely different team. Like that happens in professional sports. So just because people would be like, why would he ever go to the, like, that's crazy. Like, yeah, it's outlandish to think, but let's just think about what just happened this past week. Also on Monday, Kyle Dubas said, I think the quote was, you know, I'm not going to pop up somewhere next week and put my family through that. It's just, I can't do that to them.
Right.
Which of course got what?
Right.
You know, Chris Johnston basically threw a rose on the stage at his feet and just crying. They've talked about it, actually. These guys were like, it was really emotional, that press conference. Like, he's got choked up talking about this. Like, he's playing you guys. But yet he said that and then had his boss 5 days later go on that same stage and then tear him apart limb from limb.
Right. Hour by hour, minute
hour
by, minute.
By hour in front of his his people. Yeah. It was very Games of Thronesian.
Yeah.
That what Shanahan did. Like, you are now my subjects. Like, you are James Myrtle. Like, your man is gone. And try texting him. He's going to tell you no comment.
Don't forget who's in charge here, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And I hate Brendan Shanahan. I truly do. I always have. And for those 25 minutes, boy, did I not hate him.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how what I'm getting at with Dubis is, man, this guy is been annoying.
Yeah.
And it's maybe it's not his fault as much as it is Joshua Cloak's and Chris Johnston's and James Myrtle's fault, what the way I feel about him. But he's not the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs anymore.
Yeah.
He's not. So if he I don't hate him. He's not you know, he's not wearing that leaf on his lapel anymore and whatever. And if you said to me on Monday after his press conference, you know, he's going to be the Islanders' next, you know, big front office hire after that business guy that they hired last week, I would have said, nah, probably not. It didn't sound like it. But after the Shanahan thing,
I truly
think it's inside the realm of possibilities, because the one thing I could tell you that Kyle Dubas knows is he knows the move that he can make. This is personal now. I think we can be fair, right?
Right.
Like between him and Shanahan and
sure.
however this is going. And I think he would, if you said, okay, well, which of these moves, possible moves that you can make would piss them off the most? And you can maybe make a salient argument that it would be the Senators.
Right.
And I think on the surface, that's a pretty easy argument to make. But when you dig into it.
Who, by the way, still have a general manager.
Yes.
Like, this is what's funny to me about the Senators thing, because Dubas apparently is from Ottawa. He grew up a Senators fan. And it's like, oh, well, you know, he and Spezza can go take over the Senators. That'd be great. Yeah, you might want to run that by Pierre Dorion. Like, you know, like that's kind of cruel, dude. Get the fuck out of here. Come on.
And let's just say he, you know, Dorion's kicks upstairs, whatever.
Right.
Like, you could say, like, yeah, they're a provincial rival. The Senators are kind of little brother in there. And that would piss them off. But.
Right.
I could tell you that Kyle Dubas understands the nuance of what going to the Islanders would do.
Right.
What it would do to James Myrtle. Luke Fox jukebox would just disintegrate.
Into
thin air.
The tears. Yeah. Oh my God. Could you imagine? Have you ever heard a grown man cry in like a 20,000 word essay on a website? you would hear eight people do that. It wouldn't even just be them. It would be the Doms and the all these other like analytics guys that are all just like in Dubas's pocket. They would go bananas. And here's the thing, I don't think if this guy is worried about his family while being the GM of the Leafs, like what does he think being the GM of the Senators would be? Again, assuming that this is all serious, like that would be torturous. Even worse, he could come to the island and just get away from all of that.
Yeah.
You know, he would just be divorced from all of that. Go to the beach.
Like, and be a normal guy. Like, and have a conversation with someone on a line at a deli and them just have no idea who you are.
Yeah. If the worst thing that would happen, we talk about this all the time, you'd be getting a line, he'd be online at a bagel shop, and you might hear one or two people be like, yo, Kyle, make sure you beat the Rangers this week. Okay, man, thanks. Yeah, take care.
Or someone might buy his breakfast for him.
Right. That's it. Right. You might get recognized at Roosevelt Field Mall.
Yeah, maybe. He won't have to see a 17 thread tweet. Right.
Oh my God. Or
17 tweet thread from Joshua Cloak about what he just ate at the said deli. Like,
he won't find pictures of himself on Twitter drinking coffee and talking to people about, oh, what deal is he working on here? I mean, maybe he's just drinking a coffee. Like, I don't even know. But anyway, if you're sitting there thinking like, why would we want them to hire somebody out of spite? This entire team is built on spite. Yeah. Spite is baked into the fabric of the Islanders. They exist because of spite for the WHA, for the various political parties in charge in Nassau County when the Coliseum was built. Spite for naysayers.
Butch Goring's retirement, jersey retirement.
All of it.
Butch Goring's bobblehead day on Tavares being back in the Coliseum this
double
year.
Double chili, all of that stuff. Yep. It's all part, the 50 and 50, it's all part of, I mean, maybe not 50 and 50, but like all of these things are in spite. The Potvin sucks and the whole, like, it's all built out of spite. This
Which
team
is
built.
What it's all about. It's about right. being. Like, people are like, you're such a hater. Right. Why would you get like? Oh,
the entire 83 finals are all about spite. They shut those bastards out because they couldn't stand hearing about them. And so they Billy Smith and those guys decided they're just never going to score on us. That's spite.
Yeah, it's. man, it is. And there's just this contingent that just can't wrap their head around it. There's a bunch of and I think these are more athletic people. They were like, you know, this is going to set hockey back.
Right.
You know, what are we going to do? Just hire another old school hockey man GM, like
pretty much.
Yeah, like, and meanwhile, like, you know exactly what they're thinking. They're like, Lou Lamoriello, like, this is right. this is Lou's. First of all, there were people who said like, this is Lou's fault. Like there was a I don't know what tweet it was, and right. I gotta find it now. But yeah. but they're
right. Well, because like, you know, they already had a bunch of contracts signed.
Yeah,
whatever,
something like so. We didn't even get to see yet.
Right.
We didn't know what Dubas could truly do because he was spent the first 5 years of his tenure undoing what Lamoriello did. You know,
like he had to trade a first
drafting
round pick,
Mitch Marner.
Yeah, he had to trade a first round pick because Lou signed Patrick Marleau.
Patrick Marleau, right. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lou, and nobody ever brings up the fact on these shows. Like, I think it was the Siegel and Myrtle show, whoever it was. Someone was like, "This was finally becoming a Kyle Dubas team." Like more every year, more and more every year, it was becoming his team.
He built this front office.
Yeah, he built really from the ground up.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the Seattle Kraken?
Right.
Like, what is he talking about?
I thought that too. What is this, an expansion team? Well,
yeah, he's though. He came into a team where he already had Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, Morgan Riley, and then he had a free agent pick them. They had everything. They had more money than anyone. Destination. And yeah, I want this guy to come to Long Island very badly because I would crowdfund a blimp or something in Toronto to just, you know, Photoshop a picture of him in Islander bed sheets or whatever. I don't know what I would do. Like it would be great because
that would be amazing.
It would just, it's man, like I said, I didn't think it could get better. I really, and now I'm like, okay, it cannot get better.
It might.
But it just might.
It just might. Oh my God! If Dale Hunter gets named coach, oh my God!
Oh, there's someone had tweeted, like I think Dom at the Athletic was like, you know, the reason that Dubas got hired as GM was because he was right more often than not in like the player personnel decisions, like drafting Mitch Marner over Noah Hanifin when their assistant GM at the time was Mark Hunter, who was like his coach or GM in junior. I'm sure Mark Hunter wasn't like, don't draft this really good player because, you know, draft the other guy that I don't know.
Merrick was talking about how Hunter has a relationship with Tavares, with Marner and stuff. And I was like, oh, great. So they'll send in somebody who knows Tavares to tell him, you gotta waive your no trade clause.
We
gotta
trade.
Wait. Oh my God.
Yeah. These old hockey men are going to come in there and ruin the ultra successful Toronto Maple Leafs. And
can't wait. Let's keep our fingers crossed. Okay. Whew. Well, it's been another one. So, you know, people enjoyed the first one. We're back again and it was fun. And hey, again, we might have a third one. I can't rule it out, but we'll have to see.
No, you really just, like I said, the point I was making, like you just can't rule it out at this point.
Yeah.
You just, I have no idea what's coming next. I feel this entire saga starting from Tavares being drafted basically leading to this. In a funny way, like you feel like you're in like the last season of a TV show that you've been watching and you're just waiting for the next episode and hoping it's just going to be great because if the Islanders take next season off and it's just the Leafs just completely fall apart and Tavares is run out of town. Oh like, I don't care if the Islanders just like, are like, we got to suspend operations for a year. We can't play. Like, I wouldn't care. This would be enough for me.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see when who's on the Leafs next year. But we got a few months before the season starts.
There's nobody on their roster. They got like five guys signed. And one of them they need to trade because everyone's like, we got to get rid of one, at least one of these guys.
Man.
This roster that he built is completely barren for next season.
Right. Oh, and by the way, so are the Penguins, who may be in an even worse situation than the Leafs are. So I don't know why he would take over.
Oh,
that
Kyle Dubas is coming. He's going to tell Evgeny Malkin, like, we got to find a way out of this deal sometime.
Yeah. Chris Letang, you're from Montreal, right? Well, we'll see you later because you're a Montreal Canadian now. Yeah, I doubt that's going to happen. Anyway. All right. We need to stop here and move on. But we appreciate everybody listening and putting up with this. And hopefully, again, you feel the same way. We heard a lot of people say that, you know, they felt the same way. And these are pretty crazy. So this is an extra super long episode. We put the clips in there, but we hope you've enjoyed it. I just want to real quick before we wrap it up. I get emails occasionally from listeners and I'm the world's worst email replier. I'm so bad at it. I got to get better at it. And I read them and then I get distracted by God only knows what. And so I haven't gotten back to people and I feel really bad because these guys sent me some lovely emails and I never responded. And I just want to shout them out real quick. They're listeners. We value you. We thank you so much for your support. Joe Wheeler, Bill Pulaski, Jan Vater, thank you so much for your support, for your emails. I'm so sorry I never wrote you guys back. Something personal, I promise. I'm just the worst. I really am the worst email. Ask my cousin. He's my favorite cousin. He's a year younger than me, and we only email each other once a year on each other's birthdays, and that's it. And I really shouldn't be that way, but it is. So Joe, Bill, Jan, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it. And that's it. We will be back in a couple of weeks. We got a great episode of Weird Islanders coming up. In a couple of weeks. We just had a great episode last week on Trevor Linden with our friend John Zella from NASA Men Hockey Podcast. Check it out. It was a great look at a really weird era. We talked, you know, it's almost like Linden was kind of secondary to the era itself, but he was also kind of a poster boy for that era. So it was wild, and he was a favorite of mine. I'm really glad John picked him, and check it out. Check out NASA Men Hockey Podcast, too. Okay, sign up at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for bonus content and ad-free episodes. Follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, please. 5 stars. Thank you. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day. If you want us up to date, Islanders news and discussion. Another place to exult in Leaf failures. Visit VintageIceHockey.com. Use the code 4CUPS when you spend $50 or more. Get a free coffee mug, pint glass, or Islanders Anxiety puck. Try Wines from the Pinot Project. Follow the Fans First Sports Network on Twitter at FansFirstSN. And Mike, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lee Basket with 2 E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts for now on the Leafs? Because God knows we're going to have more. Yeah.
There's no, I want to reiterate kind of what you said, which is when we do these Islanders anxiety, a podcast about the New York Islanders episodes about the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, I used to always feel a little self-conscious when we first started doing them. Because you know you think people would get angry listening to an Islanders podcast about a different team entirely. Then the feedback has started coming in, and this isn't just from the past too, but from ones of yesteryear as well. And it always just cracks me up that the feedback we get from these podcasts, because these specific episodes, because you just get such a funny appreciation for the listeners that we have. Not only do they get it, but they're hilarious themselves, and like they see this, the humor in Luke Fox Jukebox talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs bonding at a Bruce Springsteen concert, and like how it's like the most important, like this could change the season.
That's so funny.
They made these trades, and now the first thing that Jake McCabe did was see Bruce Springsteen with his new teammates. We'll be looking back on this one when they're hoisting the cup as a seminal moment. Like they get why that stuff is just so completely insane, and these people are have come unhinged. I want to say that I appreciate that it's a conversation right now between two people, you and me, but it's really like it's basically a whatever, however many people listen to our show, conversation about this. And every single one of us, is on the exact same page. Yes. That is so hard to do with anything in life. Anything. Well, like, everybody is on the same page here.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, if you're a hockey fan, you're stuck with this stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you're an Islanders fan and you're stuck with this stuff, well, I think we're all going to be on the same page. But yeah, yeah, no, definitely. It's great. And we hope we don't wear out the welcome with these. We don't intend on doing this too often, but when this is the top story and it involves tangentially sort of revolving around the island.
No, it does. Honestly, and it's a point we haven't made yet, and I'll do it really quickly. It really does make me a little bit more grateful for Lulamarillo.
Yeah, it's true.
Stability isn't something you can really like tangibly feel.
Yeah.
And the Islanders hadn't had stability for 30 years. And they do now. And the Leafs don't. And you watch when you watch another team kind of come apart at the seams, when you watch a great unhinging, if you will, you look at the Islanders and say, you know, he's made mistakes and stuff like that. But this team is on a straight and narrow. And that is something that should not be overlooked.
Definitely. Not only are the Leafs not stable, but the Rangers and Penguins aren't stable, too. It's great. It's a great time to be an Islanders fan. So soak it in. Enjoy it. Even when the weather is shitty, as it has been occasionally lately. But sometimes it's nice. But thank you very much. We'll be back again with another episode of Weird Island. We'll be back again with another episode of Islanders Anxiety in a couple of weeks, barring any kind of news that might actually happen at some point. And thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you again later. Bye-bye.